morning. It's good to see everybody. It's good to be back after making the quick run to Wyoming and back. That's always a fun trip. I do like going up there. I like that drive. I live for that moment that we hit Interstate 80. And like York, Nebraska, we get on Interstate 80, and it's like all the rules go out the window. You know, you just find somebody that's going as fast as you want, and you just stick with them for as long as you can. And this time, and other times, Missy says, let's go this way, let's take this way. Okay, I don't, you know, that usually doesn't matter to me. But then I heard her mom and her talking about I-80 and all of the things they hate about I-80, and it was all of my driving habits that they were mentioning. And so that's very humbling. And so we're going to talk about pride this morning. It's good to see everybody. We, of course, welcome those that are joining us on Facebook as well. The question we've been asking over these weeks that we've been looking at the book of Daniel is, how do we hold on to our convictions tightly? How do we hold on to our values in this culture that seems like it doesn't really have the same kind of values that we're holding on to? And how do we not hold them in contempt for not having the same values as we do? And this is sort of where the rubber meets the road. I think for a lot of us, we can sort of figure out how to have our own values and be against the flow from culture. But, you know, how do we not hold culture against that? How do we not hold contempt against culture? So whenever it comes to loving them and wanting to redeem them out of the flow of the current world culture that is ever so present in everything that we see, that's sort of what we've been walking through in the book of Daniel, just sort of gleaning ideas on how we can serve, how we can even survive and even thrive for God when living in a modern day Babylon, so to speak. And we're kind of using Daniel as our guide. And so we're going to start chapter 4 this morning. And again, if this is maybe your first Sunday here or you're joining us online, I encourage you to read Daniel from the beginning. Daniel builds upon itself. It takes that you've read what was previous into account when you begin another chapter. Now, if you don't want to go back and listen to sermons, I understand that, right? I get that. But if you'll go back and read chapters 1, 2, and 3, I think it'll be very beneficial in understanding some context of what we're looking at. Now, I think it's interesting. So far throughout Daniel chapters 1, 2, and 3, God has been pursuing a king named Nebuchadnezzar. Now, the book is called Daniel, and we say it's about Daniel, but really so far, this book has been about God's pursuit of King Nebuchadnezzar. In chapter 1, King Nebuchadnezzar, he notices some Jewish young men that he's taken into captivity have stayed faithful to their dietary laws of their God, and it ends up blessing them so much so that they're smarter, right? They are wiser than all of the wise men in all of the kingdom of Babylon. And so in chapter 2, we see that they get blessed. King Nebuchadnezzar acknowledges that the God of Daniel is the only God who can reveal the mysteries of dreams. In chapter 3, we see Nebuchadnezzar, he has these three Hebrew young men that defy his command to bow down to some statue that he's erected out into the plains. And then he ends up praising their God as being the only God who can save like he can. And so he's praising their God, but Nebuchadnezzar has not made that God his own. Nebuchadnezzar, in some ways, and maybe our language, has sort of been flirting with God. He's sort of been sort of brushing up against some of what God has said and done and who God is, but he hasn't accepted it just yet. He hasn't really maybe put a ring on it, so to speak. He hasn't made a commitment. And so we'll pick up there in chapter 4 of Daniel. It says, King Nebuchadnezzar to all peoples and nations and languages that dwell in all the earth. Peace he multiplied to you. It has seemed good to me to show the signs and wonders that the Most High God has done for me. How great are his signs, how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion endures from generation to generation. Now this does not sound like the same Nebuchadnezzar that we've been talking about for the first three chapters. And in some senses, it's not the same, right? It is the same person, don't get me wrong, but Nebuchadnezzar has been changed. Something has happened to King Nebuchadnezzar, and he's wanting everyone to know about it. Well, what is it? And the answer is God, right? God has happened to Nebuchadnezzar. And it's changed him so much that he's like, you know what? A letter needs to go out to everybody. And when Nebuchadnezzar says everybody, he means it, right? He runs the whole known world, every race, every nation, every language throughout the world, that this letter is going to go. Of course, we're talking before radio and TV, certainly before the internet. This is the only way that you're going to get mass information to a lot of people is through letter. And Nebuchadnezzar wants to send a letter to say what has happened to him, and he wants everyone to read it. It's an impressive platform that he's going to use. God has been pursuing Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar's life has been changed, and because of that change, he's sending out this letter. And I think here's sort of the fun part. Not only is he sending this letter to everyone, but King Nebuchadnezzar, he gets to write a chapter in our Bible. There is a chapter reserved in the Bible for a Babylonian king that took the Hebrews into captivity. And again, he gets to write a chapter in the Bible. I think that's pretty neat because Nebuchadnezzar, he does all this and he tells us about his walk with God and what it took to get there, but he had a stumbling block in the way. He had to come to the realization of understanding what was standing in his way, what was actually seeing God. And if I'm honest, it's the exact same thing, I think, that stands in our way of being in full relationship with God as well. And it's that little simple thing called pride, right? For pride always gets in the way. It always gets in the way of God because sometimes we're so focused on who we are, on ourselves. We're just a prideful people about just about everything. We like everything to be about us. And when it's not really fully about us, we still try to figure out a way to make it about us. We try to figure out a way to fit ourselves into the story. We want to know what's going on and how it makes sense. We want to know why we're living this life and what we're doing is going to have impact for generations to come. And the biggest thing that we have in this world that we struggle with is pride. That was the case for the Babylonians, certainly the case for Adam and Eve, and I think it's the case for us today as well. And if you don't believe me, just as Americans, have you ever talked to somebody who's been overseas and maybe they'll say things like, we asked for ice in our tea. You should have seen the look that the locals gave us. Some things here in America that we take for granted, it isn't so in other places. And so they think maybe when we ask for that ice in our Coke, they see that as a little bit spoiled. But well, Nebuchadnezzar has came to the realization that he too is not the pinnacle of everything. In fact, I'll use the words that he'll use. He was not the Most High. Most High is a title that's reserved for Yahweh, for Yahweh God, God Most High, the God that is above all the other gods. And then in this chapter, Most High is used some six times. Nebuchadnezzar uses Most High God language six times to help the people understand what is happening But understand here, because that title, Most High, is reserved for God, that doesn't mean that we don't want a little slice of that title as well, right? We like a little bit of that title, Most High, even if it's just within our own lives. Isaiah sort of has a prophecy in Isaiah 14:12. He says, "How you are fallen from heaven, O day star, son of dawn. How you are cut down to the ground, you who laid the nations low. You said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven above the stars of God. I will set my throne on high. I will sit on the mount of the assembly in the far reaches of the north. I will ascend the heights of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High." And most of us, when we've seen this prophecy, understand that it's describing Satan, right? That's not wrong. This is a description of Satan, that Satan was banished from heaven because he wanted to be like the Most High. But more than just a description of Satan, this is also a description of the human predicament, right? We want the same thing. You think back to Adam and Eve. The original temptation, what he says is this fruit is going to make you be just like God. Or you can say, you will be just like the Most High. Adam and Eve dealt with it. They dealt with it in Isaiah's time. I don't even have to assume. We still deal with it today. It's real easy. All any of us have to do is really hold a mirror up, I think, to our lives to sort of see that temptation that is there. And I think it should be like a warning label, that whenever you start to feel like you should be like God, maybe read Daniel chapter 4. Because we all want that, right? We all want to be like God. God's awesome. God's amazing. We teach our kids to be like him. But if I do it the wrong way, if I sort of try to take a shortcut around that and what I'm doing, then I'm sort of buying into Satan's lies. And you've heard all this talk about Satan, but it's also a prophecy about a king here. In fact, if we back up just a few verses in Isaiah, he's talking about a king from Babylon. He's talking about Nebuchadnezzar. Years before Babylon had taken anybody over, Isaiah has this prophecy about a king in Babylon that is going to challenge the Most High, and he's going to end up being humbled before him. The lesson that King Nebuchadnezzar needed to learn was that he was not the Most High. And so we'll pick up here in verse 4 of chapter 4. He says, "I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at ease in my house and prospering in my palace. I saw a dream that made me afraid. As I lay in bed, the fancies and the visions of my head alarmed me. So I made a decree that all the wise men of Babylon should be brought before me, that they might make known to me the interpretation of the dream." We have heard this before, haven't we? The magicians, the enchanters, the Chaldeans, and the astrologers came in, and I told them the dream, but they could not make known to me its interpretation. At last, Daniel came in to me, he who was named Belshazzar, after the name of my God, and in whom the spirit of the holy gods, and I told him the dream. Not really. This is the same song, different verse, right? He's had a dream before. The last time he had this dream, he said, "You guys, tell me the dream and tell me what it means." This time, he's a little bit easier on him. He tells him what the dream, and then he says, "Interpret that." And they're sort of like, we don't know how to do that either. I don't really know why Nebuchadnezzar went to these wise men and enchanters and whatnot, because he already knows that Daniel's God is the only one who can interpret dreams. And so I'm sort of guessing that it's for emphasis, saying sort of like all the king's horses and all the king's men still couldn't interpret the dream, that all of these wise men and enchanters, that they couldn't do what Daniel's God is able to do. And I think that's why the Bible is pointing this out. Daniel enters in, and now we're going to get some answers here, because God can tell us what the dreams mean or what they're about. And so Daniel shows up, and we continue to see, as we've seen all throughout this book, Daniel faithfully serving God in Babylon and choosing to serve Babylon for God. And so Nebuchadnezzar tells Daniel the dream. And the dream's about a large tree, and large probably doesn't really describe this tree, right? It's a massive tree. It's so massive that all the nations of the world can see this tree. Everyone in the world, no matter what direction they're looking at, they can see this tree. And it's not just massive, it's also a blessing to all the nations of this world. They can all eat this fruit and be blessed. The birds of the air can have it. They can use the nest for their shade. It's basically saying that this tree is sent by God to be a blessing for the entire earth. And then a voice comes from heaven and it says, cut down the tree until it's just a stump. And then that metaphor, it sort of changes from a thing to a person, because in verse 16 it says, let his mind be changed from a man's, and let a beast's mind be given to him, and let seven periods of time pass over him. The sentence is by the decree of the watchers, the decision by the word of the holy ones, to the end and to the living may know that the Most High rules the kingdom of men and gives it to whom he will and sets it over the lowliest of men. And so Nebuchadnezzar asked Daniel, what does this dream mean? And Daniel turns white. Nebuchadnezzar was troubled because he didn't know what the dream means. And Daniel is troubled because he does. He does know what the dream means. And so verse 19 says, Daniel, whose name was Belshazzar, was dismayed for a while, and his thoughts alarmed him. The king answered and said, Belshazzar, let not the dream or the interpretation alarm you. And Belshazzar answered and said, my lord, may the dream be for those who hate you, and its interpretation for your enemies. And to me, it's amazing that Daniel is sort of kind and concerned for a man that I think he has every right to have contempt for. If we remember what all Daniel's gone through, this king has forced Daniel from his homeland. He's ripped him away from his family. He's taken the opportunity for Daniel to ever have a family of his own. He's taken his name, which honors his God, and given him another name, which dishonors the God that Daniel worships. He's taught the Babylonian culture. He's been tried to be indoctrinated with everything that the Babylonians have to offer. Daniel could have said or held Nebuchadnezzar in contempt, but instead, his heart breaks when he realizes what's about to happen. And I think that's something that we should really grasp, especially at this moment in time. We have people that we severely disagree with. And if you don't, you did, right? And we say terrible and horrible things about those people. And some of the things that I've been told and heard with my own ears causes me to have concern that we would wish for such a prophecy against Nebuchadnezzar to happen to somebody of our own. Because if you don't have concern for those people, and you'd wish for that to happen and you'd be glad for it to happen, I think that's a serious problem to have, that our hearts have become hard, that we've placed our hearts in the wrong place. If we get excited whenever we see the failure of anyone else, I think our hearts are in the wrong place. You're dancing on dangerous ground, and I don't care who it is. I don't care what it looks like. Your heart should break when people who could follow God don't, or they don't take the opportunities that God presents. Not excited. That's a big difference. There's a huge difference in that. Daniel could have had every reason to say, yes, serves Nebuchadnezzar right. Karma. That's what he would say in the United States today, right? Karma's going to get Nebuchadnezzar. But Daniel doesn't. His heart breaks. And I wish these dreams were about your enemies, King. Not about you. He's concerned for Nebuchadnezzar because his dream is about Nebuchadnezzar. And that tree is about to get stumped. 7 periods of time are going to pass. Scholars say that that's probably years. You're going to live this way until you learn that the Most High rules the kingdom of men and gives it to whom he will and sets it over the lowliest of men. And this is Daniel telling the king what is going to happen, but leave the stump and its roots in the earth bound for the band of iron and bronze amid the tender grass of the field. This means you'll get your kingdom back again. But you'll have to learn that heaven is what rules. That's the interpretation of this dream that's going to happen. Nebuchadnezzar's going to live like a wild animal. And if you don't get things right, Daniel doesn't stop, right? He continues. He says, King, let my counsel be acceptable to you. Break off your sins by practicing righteousness and your iniquities by showing mercy to the oppressed, that there may perhaps be a lengthening of your prosperity. Daniel doesn't just interpret the dream. He goes a step forward and gives some advice to the king. It's very similar to what Joseph does. You remember Joseph in Exodus? The Pharaoh has a dream and finally Joseph gets brought forward to interpret the dream. And then Joseph goes on and sort of gives his what he would do for domestic policy for Egypt during that time. And the Pharaoh says, who is as wise as Joseph? Well, let's make him second in command. That's pretty bold. Not to just answer what the questions the king have laid before you, but to then offer advice. Here's the interpretation of the dream. Now here's what you should do with it. He says to renounce your sin, humble yourself, repent. These things all sound pretty familiar to us, right? Whenever we read the Gospels, this is stuff that John the Baptist would say, that Jesus Christ would say, Peter, Paul, all the disciples would say, because the gospel is for all. This is the message of the gospel, right? We are on a wicked path. Well, we need to repent, turn from our ways, and get right with God. That is what Daniel is telling Nebuchadnezzar to do. And I think that Nebuchadnezzar considers it. I mean, for one, he doesn't kill Daniel right off the bat, right? Saying, how dare you tell me what to do? Fire up the furnace again, right? How dare you tell me to be merciful? Who do you think you are? Who is Daniel to Nebuchadnezzar, right? And now Daniel, who he is he's almost like an angel of God to Nebuchadnezzar. He's sharing the message. He's a messenger of God, and I think Nebuchadnezzar considers it. And the reason I say that he considers it is not just because he doesn't kill Daniel. It's because this dream doesn't immediately come to pass. It takes a little while. About a year later, the king's walking around on the flat roof of the royal palace. I say, right, if you're a king, you should not have a flat roof on your palace, right? Bad things happen to kings walking on palace rooftops in the Bible. And so Nebuchadnezzar here, he's a little too prideful. As he looks across the city, he says, is not this great Babylon, which I have built by my mighty power as a royal residence for the glory of my majesty? And you'll remember the dream of Nebuchadnezzar 12 months ago by the grace of God that hopefully that this wouldn't come to pass, but in 12 months that dream is forgotten and God has allowed that dream to become a reality. It says, while the words were still in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken. The kingdom has departed from you, and you shall be driven from among men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and you shall be made to eat grass like an ox, and 7 periods of time shall pass over you, until you know that the Most High rules the kingdom of men and gives it to whom he will. And immediately the word was fulfilled against Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from among men and ate grass like an ox, and his body was wet with dew of heaven till the hair grew as long as eagle feathers and his nails were like bird's claws. You think in the blink of an eye, that's what Scripture is saying. As the words were still coming out of his lips, in that moment the man who ruled the world became lower than the lowest person in the kingdom. The person who thought he was above everyone became the lowest. And some have described what happened to Nebuchadnezzar during those 7 years was that he went crazy. I would argue the opposite. I would say that everything prior to those 7 years was Nebuchadnezzar being crazy. What happened during these 7 years was Nebuchadnezzar finding his sanity. I would think that living like a wild animal, as an outcast, he learned a wonderful, clarifying truth about who God is and who Nebuchadnezzar wasn't in that moment. I think he was looking up saying, "Oh, I am certainly not God." And after 3 chapters of flirting with God, Nebuchadnezzar surrenders after this time has passed. At the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven, and my reason returned to me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever, for his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom endures from generation to generation. Remember, this letter's going out to the whole kingdom. Nebuchadnezzar is sending to everyone into the world saying, "I looked up and I realized that his kingdom, not mine, is eternal. His name is everlasting. His name is to be praised and not mine." In this moment of time, Nebuchadnezzar is the most famous man in the world. He's probably the most proud man in the world at this time as well. But he sends out a letter to the whole world about the most humiliating thing that has ever happened to him, because that most humiliating thing is the thing that he becomes the most proud of. Paul would say, "I would boast in my weaknesses." It's not normal, right? It's not normal, but that's what we do. We boast in our weakness because that's what kingdom people do. It's what people who are chasing after God do, because we recognize in my weakness, God is made strong. He boasts about the most humiliating thing ever. And I think the thing that we need to realize that sometimes God has to cut down a tree in order to save it. Nebuchadnezzar says, "At the same time, my reason returned to me, and for the glory of my kingdom, my majesty, my splendor returned to me. My counselors and my lord sought me, and I was established in my kingdom, and still more greatness was added to me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, for all his works are right and his ways are just, and those who walk in pride, he is able to humble." Sometimes God has to cut down a tree in order to save it. And maybe here's the best part. When I read this story, I do believe that Nebuchadnezzar is a saved person. I believe that when we get to heaven, that we're going to be able to have a face-to-face meeting with Nebuchadnezzar, a Babylon king that gave his life to God. This chapter gives me that hope. It tells me that no one is beyond the saving grace of God. You can't think of anyone that has done anything that is beyond the saving grace of God. You might have some options, and they might be some good ones, but they are going to be wrong, because God's grace can reach everyone. Whether they accept God's grace, now that's a different story, right? But the minute that we start thinking God's grace is beyond someone, is the minute that we've stopped being like Daniel. We've stopped being like Christ. We've stopped being like a Christian, because part of being a Christian means understanding that this message is for everyone. There are no exceptions unless we're too proud. James would say that God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. So humble yourselves before God. We have an option this morning. If you find yourself a little bit more like Nebuchadnezzar, heed the words of Daniel, right? Humble yourself, but before God humbles you. And if you humble yourself before God, then maybe you don't have to endure the dream of making it a reality. But if you choose to remain in your proud state, there's that Johnny Cash song, right? That God's going to cut him down. I think that's true in its sentiment, that God is going to cut the sinners down eventually, because he opposes the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. And so maybe you found that you haven't really considered, maybe that you are a selfish person, or that you have pride in the wrong kinds of things. And basically, if you have pride in anything that's not focused on God, it's the wrong thing. if it's not directed towards God, it's not good. So maybe we need to be like Nebuchadnezzar and heed the words of Daniel and repent and stop sinning, change your ways. That's good advice. Again, that's advice that Jesus would give and Paul would give and every person who stood behind a pulpit for all of time, right? So stop sinning, change your ways. That's always good advice. But maybe on the other side of that, maybe you need to be a Daniel for someone else. Maybe you need to be bold enough to go up to someone that you love and say, I don't think you're living the way you should. That's never a fun conversation to have with anyone, right? It's not an easy message to have, especially in today's time. Who are you to judge me? Well, it's not really judging. It is sort of being the messenger of the Most High, and the Most High wants you to be with them. And so this morning, I don't know if you're Nebuchadnezzar, or I don't know if you need to be a Daniel, but certainly we need both, because God is pursuing the Nebuchadnezzars of this world, and he is using the Daniels to do it. And so wherever you fall, if you need prayers during this walk that God has called you on this morning, or if you're ready to put Christ on in baptism, the baptismal waters are prepared as well. Whatever your need may be, please come as together we stand and we sing.